Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Victory Monday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. We are joined by two incredible guests today. Of course, we've got Tyler Brook, 33rd team. You can find him on Twitter at Tyler D. Brook, and Nathan Marzion. You can find him on Behind the Bucks Pass. And of course, here on the Pack-A-Day Podcast at Nathan Marzion, very creatively named. Nathan, Tyler, how the heck are you guys doing?
A win's a win, right? Great Sunday, beautiful day outside. Probably should have gone outside a little bit more, but there was just too much good football on.
That was yesterday and today. I was like, hey, I should have been more productive, done a little bit more with my life, but I sat on the couch and watched football for, 12 hours yesterday and probably 12 hours today or 8 hours today. So, it's been a great weekend. And, as you said, it was a interesting Packers win. One of those that we talked before. I was like, it was a great win. And then we were kind of like, oh, it wasn't totally a great win. It was more just a great game to win. So yeah, it was good.
Never apologize for a win. Every win is a great win in some capacity, especially against a very good team like the Houston Texans, who I thought came ready to play. You could tell the chippiness in this game before it even started. Stephon Diggs and Jair and Nixon are getting into it. Like, for two teams that don't play each other very often, there definitely was a little bit of animosity. These teams did not seem to like each other very much. And you could tell, I think both teams recognized just that they were playing against another very good team and very much wanted to come away with a victory in this one. Of course, Packers win 24-22. The Packers -3 in turnover differential. And going into this game, these are the stats. The teams that were -3 in point differential this season were 0-13. Going back to the year 2000, 82 wins, 753 losses, and two ties when you lose the turnover differential by 3. I can only imagine that number is even worse when you're going against a good football team, like a team with a winning record, and you have a -3 turnover differential. I don't know about you guys. If you would have told me going into this game that Green Bay would be -3, I'd be just like, all right, well, we'll live to see another week. That one's not going to come out as a victory. But I think that one of the key stories in this one is Green Bay found a way to win, and it's not always the prettiest. There were issues on all three phases, but there were good takeaways from all three phases as well. Nathan, I'll start with you. Your kind of key takeaways from this one.
Yeah, the defense was absolutely incredible in this game. And, holding CJ Stroud to 86 passing yards is absurd. I had their struggles against the run, but Mixon's been carving up defenses all year every time he's been on the field. So I'm not too, I'm totally concerned about that. I just thought it was very impressive how much they were able to take away Stroud. The pass rush was a lot better today, and they really just felt more aggressive on defense and made their stamp on the game. As you said, this is a game that kind of was tailor-made for them to lose. When you throw in the special teams mistakes and the turnovers, it's like, this is how you lose football games, and they still found a way to win it in the end. And that's just something that, not many teams are able to do, is win games where you still make these mistakes. And, I talked about it the last time we were on here about how, their record's good, but they still could be so much better, and they still have so many areas for improvement. And I think that still applies now, and it's a good thing to have, where you're winning games, but this isn't like everything's broken perfectly for the Packers. They have had guys disappointing on the defensive side of the ball. Jordan Love got hurt for two games and has been a little bit inconsistent, and has come back from injury and everything. You've had issues with penalties. You've had special teams issues. The special teams has still been really bad, and you still are winning. You're still 5-2. You're still winning ball games. So I think it was just one of those games where it felt like in the fourth quarter, like they're going to blow this game. And this just is one of those, the special teams lets them down and the offensive mistakes come back to bite them. And again, for them to still pull through was awesome and very impressive.
The Packers have put together a playbook of how to let you down in big games over the years. And they kind of followed it to a T in this game of this is how we normally do this. Multiple turnovers, awful special teams, this is what we do sometimes in big games. But to your point, they came away with a win. Tyler, what were your key takeaways?
I'm doubling down on that defense, man. I mean, I don't think it can be emphasized enough how special that performance was for a defense that has had to thrive off takeaways all year. to not have that and then have 55 net passing yards, 3.4 yards a play, have them go 4 of 13 on third down and then come away with 4 sacks. Like Jeff Hafley, there should never be a conversation about him being in the same category as Joe Barry ever again. The blitz schemes, the way they drew up things and pressures on third down were phenomenal. Stroud was pressured on more than half of his dropbacks, and on those pressures, he went 2 of 9 for like 12, 15 passing yards. We've been talking for the last few weeks, like, hey, the pressure's got to start getting there. Like, this defense can't sustain itself if you're just relying on takeaways. And like, today's the perfect example of it. You didn't get a takeaway, but, and you were put in bad situations field because of special teams blunders and interceptions and things like that. But, you know, you held your own. Quay Walker got hurt. You figured out how to stop the run without him. And then you found ways to generate pressure, and it paid off in a huge way. Like, I cannot emphasize enough how massive of a defensive performance that is with the situations they kept getting put in. I'm just absolutely thrilled with it.
I came away frustrated with this defensive performance, if I'm being honest with you.
Okay.
I'm frustrated because I had to sit through 3 years of a Joe Barry defense when something like this was sitting out there. Like, that's where I came away frustrated. I'm like, wow. this is sitting right there for
you.
Like,
me in the first half.
I know, right? They could have done some of this stuff. Like, and I know Xavier McKinney, Evan Williams, Javon Buller, Edgerrin Cooper. There are players that are on this team right now that Joe Barry did not have at his disposal. It's not an apples to apples comparison, but I always look at coordinators, offensive and defense, at least when it comes to play calling and scheming things up. So I look at Matt LaFleur and Jeff Hafley in this situation, or Matt LaFleur and Joe Barry previously. It's like, there's got to be a few plays every single game that you scheme up for your guys to be set up in a fantastic position. And Jeff Hafley came ready for this game. He was ready to take away CJ Stroud. And yeah, you gave up a little bit of, Joe Mixon runs here and there, and that's going to happen from time to time. I knew going in, and I think everyone knew going in, you were going to completely stop this Texans offense, right? Like, they've got a great rushing offense. You've got a very talented quarterback, Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell. Like, they're going to get some stuff. I was wondering, are they going to focus more on Mixon? Are they going to focus more on taking away CJ Stroud? And listen, Mixon got his a few times, but they took CJ Stroud out of this game, got him out of his rhythm, pressured him all day long, and came, like, how many different unique blitzes did we see? And to the point where it, like, got to later in the game on third down, and I'm like, all right, they've blitzed heavily on like every third down. Like, they can't keep doing it, right? Because they're going to see it coming. It's like, nope, just keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. And it was something different and unique every time. And it was fun to watch. I love his game plan in this one. Go ahead, Tyler.
I don't want to derail this too much, but how much of that game plan going in do you think had an impact on why the defensive backs were acting so psychotic pregame? Like, they clearly knew that this was coming. Like, a lot of blitzes, they're playing super aggressive, and they were talking there, you know what, like, yep, the whole game. I think that has something to do with it. And if, like, that's the mentality you're getting these defensive backs into, shoot, man, like, I think they're starting to rally around this guy.
I talked last year, just really quick, Nathan, I talked last year of how, like, we always talk about RAS as relative athletic score. I said, I need some relative asshole score guys on this team. Like, I need some guys to do some chirping. I need some guys to be a little bit of I'm good with it. Like, I want that intensity. And listen, I know sometimes they might chirp a little bit too much. And Jair got the 15-yard penalty last week. Nathan, you know extremely well, the Bucs don't win that championship without PJ Tucker on that team. You need a PJ Tucker every now and again on your team. This team's got a couple PJ Tuckers for the first time, and I am so here for it. And I just love the way that this defense is playing and the mentality of them right now.
You absolutely read my mind, because I was going to make that comparison to the Bucs and say, you know, in basketball, they always talk about you need dogs, you need those guys that are going to get in people's face and do all that. And that's how this Packers defense has felt over the past few years, is they just always felt a little soft. And it was always like, they don't have those dogs on defense. And, you know, again, there are players here and there that would show that, but it just wasn't a consistent thing. And the way they played was not an aggressive style. And just to see that today and see that for some of this season has been, you know, awesome. One thing too, I thought it was awesome that they were constantly getting the Texans behind the chains. And it was, I think on first down, they had, so out of the 26 Texans first down plays, 11 of them went for either no gain or loss.
Wow.
And 17 of them out of the 26 were a 2 yard gain or less. So they basically never were letting the Texans get much on first down and just constantly putting them, you know, in bad positions. And it was just, yeah, it was awesome. It was a clinic.
I forget who I talked to last week because I talked to too many people through the course of the week. I think it may have been with Aaron Nagler last week, but one of the things that I brought up and mentioned is that Jeff Hafley is not afraid on early downs to be aggressive. And the beautiful thing about the back end of this defense with guys like McKinney and Bullard and Evan Williams is that if you allow a big play, like, so if he's going to be aggressive and it allows you, allows the offense on the other side to get a play out of it because you were maybe a little over aggressive, that play's not going for 50, 60, 70, 80 yards and a touchdown. It's going for maybe 12, 15, maybe 20 yards on the play, and you get a chance at another first down. But in the scheme of that, they are being ultra aggressive on first down, hoping that they are going to get you with a sack or a tackle for a loss or a pass breakup to get you in some of those second and third and long situations where then he can be even more aggressive, bringing pressure on some of those plays. So it's almost like, you know what? We're going to be aggressive on first down. And if you pick up a first down because of it, awesome. Now we're going to be aggressive on first down again. And one of these times we're going to get you in a second and 15 or a third and 13 eventually. And then we're getting off the field. So if we have to give up a few plays on the way to do that, and we're going to make sure because our safeties are awesome that those are going to be held in check, we can live with that. And in the meantime, it is causing a crap ton of chaos for opposing offenses. And we saw it with CJ Stroud on this game.
You want to repeat that? You said the safeties are awesome. I just need to sit in that for a second.
I know it's weird. A long time.
What a world we live in. What a world.
I know. Oh, that's amazing. All right, let's transition to this. I want to go to our Luigi's Pizza players of the game in this one. You can go in any direction. We can all agree if it's the same player. We can go in three different players. We can go, it doesn't matter whatsoever. So who wants to start first to a Luigi's Pizza player of the game?
Oh, I got it.
All right, let's do it.
It's Eric Wilson. I had another one I'm going to say, but it's not as fun because I believe Eric Wilson had one of the single greatest, I don't know what happened, I just blacked out performances in Packers history. Quay Walker goes down with a concussion. It's a scary moment. And then you're like, all right, who's going to step up for him? You know, it's going to mean more Cooper snaps. But I mean, Wilson kind of played almost the entirety of the game on defense. I think he had four tackles for loss, two sacks. I think his biggest play of the game was a third down pass breakup where it looked like an easy catch and he just kind of punches that thing out of the guy's hands. He was everywhere in the game. You're seeing him just as a blitzer, as a tackler. And he's kind of someone that like I've always kind of liked because he's had a very like specific role, special teams reserve linebacker. And to see him just kind of be like, all right, guess this is my game to just black out was really impressive. And I think my hot take might be that he's going to win NFC Defensive Player of the Week because I haven't seen too many crazy performances this week. I also haven't paid that much attention. But the way he filled the stat sheet and just the fact that a lot of those plays came on like third downs, I'm curious to see if that happens.
Could very well agree with you. I was going to say, I agree with absolutely everything that was just said. He was going to be my pick as well. I think just watching this game, he was the guy that completely jumped off the screen. And, you know, you said all the stats, four tackles for loss, two sacks, two QB hits, the pass deflection on the third down. That was huge. You know, just an absolutely incredible performance from him. And, you know, it felt like every single play, it was just 45 is making a play. And, you know, again, that was absolutely fantastic. He's been, I mean, even coming into this game on, you know, a limited number of total snaps, he was their third ranked PFF defensive player behind Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney. So he's been good in the limited snaps he's gotten this year. And then, you know, to play more today and continue that success was great to see. I mean, also shout out Evan Williams having another great game and just continuing to be a super promising and awesome player for us at safety. And nine tackles, six of them solo. You know, he was great. He had that 2-point conversion stop, which proved to be huge for the end result. So yeah, he was awesome as well. So I'll shout him out too.
Somebody in the live post game asked me offense, defense, and special teams. Defense, Eric Wilson was my answer. Offense, I went Romeo Doubs. But my player in this game, I'm going Daniel Whalen.
Yeah.
I'm going Daniel Whalen. All right. So here's from Aaron Nagler. Daniel Whalen punted five times today for 284 yards, a 56.8 yard gross average. That is the second best single game average in team history, behind only everyone's favorite, Roy McKay, 61.6 yard average on five punts versus the Chicago Cardinals in 1945.
Wow.
It was not only that, which was an unbelievable performance. That snap on the final game-winning kick of the game was brutal. I mean, Matt Orzech, it was like almost a dribbler, and it goes to the side of him, and he's got to get it pivoted back across his body. And for Whalen to handle that and get that spun around and put in place where McManus could still hit that kick, Like that was a huge play in the game, like literally game on the line sort of play. So not only the unbelievable punting, which flipped the field position on a variety of different occasions, not only was he kicking the crap out of the ball from a length standpoint, but getting the huge hang time so guys could get down there and then to come up clutch with the huge hold at the end so that Brandon McManus could make that kick at the end. I know it's not the sexiest thing in the world. I think maybe that's what you were saying before, Tyler, and the player that maybe you wanted to mention, but it's not the second. This to me was a huge performance. I've been doing it all season long. So I know the special teams is a little bit maybe, on people's radar in this one for some bad stuff. This was some really good stuff from Daniel Whelan. And I know you never really want your punter to be your player of the game. And usually those games do not maybe come out as wins. This one was a win for Whelan, and it came out as a win for Green Bay because of what he was able to accomplish in this game.
I mean, we had to know that the kick was going to be shaky after how perfect the first one was before McManus got iced. As soon as I saw that it was perfect, I was like, I don't feel good. I don't feel any good. Like, I feel bad about this now. And then I saw the snap, and I was like, well, there it is. And then I saw it kicked, and I went, well, that's going left. I think we're just traumatized as Packers fans from kicking since Mason Crosby left. But I'm hopeful. We'll see. Now I think you might need to go find a long snapper, but
we're traumatized with special teams in general. It's like whatever, if it's a punt, if it's a kickoff, anything, I just feel like something's going to go wrong. Some way they're going to screw it up. And yeah, I mean, it was good to see them come through for once though.
I remember Mark Murphy in the offseason, he vetoed the new kick return rules. I'm wondering if it's just because his new rule was that he wanted to be done with special teams entirely. Let's just get rid of special teams altogether and let's just not have it be a thing because it is usually a curse for Green Bay. But we'll talk about these special teams offense and defense in a little bit greater detail. Let's start with the special team since we're kind of already there. And I know we talked about the defense quite a bit already, but we'll jump into that a little bit more. But let's start with the special teams on this one because this was a very unique performance from a special team standpoint. On the bad side, of course, you've got Keyshawn Nixon not fielding a punt, which leads to it bouncing, which I've been at practices over and over and over again, hearing Rich Bisaccia yell at returners to make sure that they are catching it because this is the exact situation that he does not want have happening. Because when you get a live ball out there and a bunch of bodies all over the place, this is the sort of stuff that happens. And the ball was up there long enough for Nixon to be able to judge it, call a fair catch, get under it, call everyone out, and make sure that he's catching that thing. Instead, it hits the ground, bounces up and hits Ballantyne, and is a massive turnover in this game. Then you've got Jaden Reed fielding one from his end zone, taking it out and only getting back to the 4-yard line, which was brutal. You allowed a kick return that went out past the 40-yard line, which led to points off of that. So it was a very shaky performance from that side of things from the special team, specifically in the return units. Also, you had a penalty on the opening kick return of the game that brought you back a little bit as well. And then on the other side, we talked about Daniel Whelan being amazing. And you obviously had McManus make the game-winning field goal at the end and make all of his extra points. So definitely some up and down here. Tyler, I'll start with you. Thoughts on the special teams performance in this game?
Yeah, the Nixon one's super frustrating. The Corey Ballantyne, made contact with, because if you're not going to catch it, at least what I've had to coach kids into, which I like to think we got pretty good at it this year, but if you're not going to catch it as a returner, what you're supposed to do is point to where it is landing and you scream your word. For a lot of teams, it's Peter. For us, it was poison. And so you point there and you scream where it's going to land, Peter, 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 and everyone needs to run to the sideline. And if you watch the replay, Nixon just kind of like, he's like, I'm not going to get it, and just kind of like watches it fall. So I don't think that's on Ballantyne at all. That's 100% on Nick. And I don't, like you said, I don't think that's on Bisaccia. That's just a effort, head in the game kind of thing. The Reed one's also bad. When they got a touchback on a punt return, I was like, oh, hey, look, you actually did the right thing and didn't try to catch it or do anything silly. Special teams are always an issue. And I think I keep getting more and more nervous because the biggest boon of the special teams has been punting. And as we've seen, like, I always think of Corey Bohorquez. As soon as the weather really starts dropping, it gets a lot harder to punt. And if that's your strongest point of special teams, and then maybe that starts going away, like suddenly this unit might be in really big trouble.
Yeah. Nathan?
Yeah, it's definitely concerning. We've had this for several years now of just poor special teams play. And it's something that, I don't have any confidence in it getting a ton better because it just is so consistently bad. Feels like all the time. I remember tweeting the PFF rankings of their special teams. I think I have it pulled up here. Yeah, their special teams PFF rankings by year. I'll start with 2013. This is 2013 until now. 30th, 31st, 14th, we had one good year, 14th, 32nd, 30th, 32nd, 24th, 29th, 31st, 26th, 28th. And then this year they're 30th. And that might go down after this week. So it's just, it's been a disaster. And it just, our special teams is cursed, man. And we've had so many, like, we've had so much luck. We can't really complain too much. We've had luck with the quarterback situation, obviously always working out for us, that the football gods kind of had to curse us with bad special teams every year. And I just, it's one of those things that you just feel like every year, like somehow this is going to be how we lose a playoff game. Is this special team is going to come back, bite us in the butt. And it feels the same way again this year. You know, I love this team. I feel very good about this team, but it just hurts to still have this, you know, special teams always, you know, kind of screwing up stuff for us. And it was, you know, again, it felt 100% like, hey, this is the perfect way for this game to end is going to be on a missed 45-yard field goal from your new kicker. It's going to be the cherry on top of a terrible special teams day. But, you know, again, thank God they came through with that one and were able to kind of save the day. But just some, as you said, I don't really think you can put it all on Bisaccia. Like, some of these are just mental mistakes and just guys making the wrong play. And, you know, I don't know why Reed is fielding that. I don't know why Nixon is not fielding his. It's just weird stuff, but it just consistently happens. And it's been years now of this under several different coordinators that they just have not been able to be competent on special teams. And it's got to get cleaned up, at least get it to the point of it not sucking. Like, I'm not saying they have to have great special teams and be making, you know, amazing plays every single game, but it's just, it can't be this bad. It's got to be a little bit better than this, or else it's going to be something that ends up costing them their season.
Hey everybody, it's week eight. Slow down, season. You're going way, way, way too fast, but there's still plenty of NFL season left, which means there's still plenty of Prize Picks winning to be done. Right now, when you sign up on Prize Picks, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It is guaranteed. Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long. Of course, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. This week, I'm going with kickers. You heard me right. I am going with kickers. Justin Tucker, he is going to kick a ton of field goals against the Browns. Younghoe Koo is going to kick a bunch against the Bucks, and Brandon McManus is going to do well in his return to Jacksonville. So it is kicker week for me on Prize Picks. As always, there are plenty of options for you to choose from. But remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game.
I'll put a slightly positive spin on the special teams before we move back to defense here for a second. Maybe. I'm not holding my breath, but maybe they found their kicker in Brandon McManus. We know they found their punter in Daniel Whalen, and their punt coverage, knock on wood and any other superstitious thing that you want to do, their punt coverage has been pretty solid so far. And again, a large part due to Daniel Whalen and the massive hang time. Kick returns are basically dead. And even if you do get kick returns, Keyshawn Nixon, not a bad person to have back there from a kick return standpoint. Two-time first team All-Pro. Last year, a little bit fluky, but the year before that was certainly well-deserved. And I still feel good anytime from a kick return standpoint that Keyshawn actually gets the ball in his hands. And then kickoffs, if you want to just basically get the touchback every single time and just not have to cover it, you can kind of do that every time. So the only thing that I'm really left being sort of nervous/concerned about is punt returns. And if they could just figure out a way to clean that up, I would feel better about, I think, the special teams as a whole. And maybe that's still too far of a bridge to cross when you're the Green Bay Packers and when it comes to special teams. And I'm not crowning any sort of Brandon McManus hero kicker for the rest of the season yet, but just maybe they can get this together enough where they can put together just a decent, that's all we're asking, just a decent special teams, just one that's not going to lose you games. And some positives in this one, certainly some big negatives as well. Punt return, the big one that gives me concern moving forward.
Stop putting Jaden Reed on punt return. Like, I don't care who you figure out, but I think he's too valuable of a slot receiver to have out there.
So it's interesting. Let's talk about this really quick, because I talked about this last week as well. And I don't like Reed back there for A, because I don't want him to get hurt, and B, I just don't think he's that good of a punt returner, actually, which is weird because he's unbelievable with the ball in his hands.
I know.
But he's not that dynamic, and we kind of even saw that even when he did field it. Like, if he just outraces that guy to the corner, like, he might actually get at least decent yardage and at least not backed up in your own 5 yard line or 4 yard line, whatever it was. But he just hasn't been dynamic as a returner. I do like how safe he is back there, meaning outside of this one, he usually makes the right decision. He usually is very, sure as, just catching the ball. If, fair catches it when he needs to. So, like, I like that version of it, but it's not like the risk reward. You're risking one of your best players on offense, and the reward is like a mediocre punt returner at best. I even talked about this last week, is I don't love Keyshawn Nixon back there because he's a wild card. He might give you a massively explosive punt return, which we saw a week ago, but he might do the exact thing we saw today. It's just like, nope, not catching this. Or like even the one last week where he like caught to the side of him, where there's a guy like a millisecond away and then has to like sidestep him and gets tackled immediately on the play. Like, no. That's just fair catch that. But like, you don't know what he's caught like three over his head in his career. Like, it's just like, it's completely wild card fest that you're going to get an A or an F and nothing in between. And I'm like, I don't know that's what I want. And we saw it kind of haunt Green Bay in this game. And then you get to like, I don't know who else that it is. Like, can you put in Evan Williams back there and just have him kind of be the, again, fair catch guy and make sure nothing goes wrong? They just picked up a guy in the practice squad this week whose name I don't even remember or care about at this point, who's kind of a return specialist in college, if I remember correctly. But I don't know who that person is, but they got to get it figured out. And I don't feel great about Nixon or Reed or really anyone else at this point.
There's a guy on the market. You might have heard of him. He has punt return experience. His name is Amari Rodgers.
Oh, my God. I thought you were going to go like Randall Cobb. I'm like, no, we're not doing that. Amari's a worse idea. But, yeah, I don't know where you go in this situation. But and it's not like you have like this open wide receiver spot on your roster either, where it's like, well, we'll just add a return specialist. Like, you could do a practice squad guy and call him up for 3 weeks, but you only get 3 weeks to call him up. So I don't know. They got to figure something out, though. Let's go back to defense for just a moment. Let's talk about something more fun. We talked, obviously, about how they were able to bring a bunch of pressure. And Rashawn Gary, I thought, looked his best in this game. I want to get to snaps really quick. Evan Williams played 64 out of 64 snaps in this game per PFF. Eric Wilson played 57 of 64, in large part due to the Quay Walker injury. Edgerrin Cooper was at 41 of 64, so he played a bunch in this game. Javon Bullard, interestingly enough, only 29 of 64 snaps in this game. Eric Stokes, only 8 of 64 snaps. So those are some of the more intriguing defensive snaps. Any of those stand out to you guys?
Bullard, I mean, that nickel role is kind of limited, and it seemed like he was originally just going to be that paired safety with McGinney, but like, you can't keep Evan Williams off the field at this point. Really stinks. I saw Bullard tweet last week too. Like, it was an old like Georgia highlights clip of him of all of his plays from college, and he just like quoted it saying, "Still trying to find this guy." So clearly, like, maybe he's having an issue with confidence. It's not like he's playing bad when he's out there, though. I think it's just one of those situations where like, you're getting just usurped by this kid that's just on an incredible heater right now. So that stinks. Linebacker, though, Cooper keeps getting me excited, man. Yeah. I saw old tweets of me getting excited about him back in like January of last year. So the fact that he's in Green Bay now and is doing all this, and I think by the end of the year in the playoffs, he's going to have a real impact. I just keep getting excited.
Yeah, definitely feel bad for Bullard a little bit. Just as you said, it's really just kind of him, or it's just Evan Williams being awesome right now. That's kind of just taking over that role. So, but yeah, it's great to see Evan Williams playing every single snap. I mean, he's just completely been, amazing when he's on the field, and kind of just giving them no choice but to play him, every snap and just keep him on the field because he's been so good. Stokes only 8 of 64. He has been struggling a lot, and it's just been going get down and down. So, interesting to see how him only playing 8 snaps is pretty crazy, how far we've dropped in just a very short amount of time. And yeah, Cooper is, him and Wilson and Williams are the three that today it was just like, I love these guys. Like, they just are so good when they're on the field. And as you said, he just keeps getting more and more snaps, and he very soon could be in a situation where, he's playing almost every snap and he's just completely a regular part of this defense. And, I'm very excited for that because he has been great when he's on the field.
I'm interested to go back and watch this one a little bit closer, because what the numbers would tell me, just based off of these snaps, 29 for Bullard, 8 for Stokes, is that they were in base for a bunch of this game. And I can't confirm that, just like going off of what I know from that. So I'm going to kind of go back and look, but it would tell me that if you had Nixon on the field, obviously the majority of the game, and Jair on the field for the majority of the game, that, you know, you're either going to have Bullard or Stokes on the field as your other one when you're a nickel. Stokes only played 8, Bullard only played 29. I'm thinking, and I know there was some dime in there as well, where I think Stokes was on the field for a couple snaps. So I'm thinking like they probably were in base more than nickel in this one, just based on that. And that would, you know, tend or lend me to believe that this wasn't necessarily so much a we don't want Bullard on the field sort of thing. It was just like it ended up where they ended up playing 3 linebackers, maybe more than they expected to. And that led to not having Bullard in the slot. And then clearly Williams has just kind of become that safety next to Xavier McKinney, which I don't think anyone's going to argue with at this point. My guess is next week against Jacksonville, they play more nickel and we see a lot more Javon Bullard in the slot again. And I think that just kind of evens itself back out. But I don't think you can take Evan Williams off the field. And I think that's the right decision. And that's to both of your points, no knock on Javon Bullard whatsoever, who I think is still going to have a very, very nice career in Green Bay.
Just looking at Stokes, the last 4 weeks, yeah, he went from 66 snaps to 55 to 16 and now to 8. So just a total drop off the last 2 weeks, as you know, you kind of just see him or don't see him much on the field at all anymore.
Yeah. Thoughts on Rashawn Gary in this one? We saw a bigger Rashawn Gary impact. I know the one play, of course, offensive tackle falls down. He gets the sack on that play. They lined him up over center, did some Zadarius Smith type stuff with him, which worked pretty well. A lot of different pressures. I thought he held up well against the run at first glance. Again, excited to watch him and kind of what he looks like on the film. But overall, I thought this was his most impactful game that we've seen out of him on the season so far.
Yeah, the last two games, I think he did a really good job of making Kyler Murray uncomfortable as well, which is, you know, tougher assignment as far as mobility. I think the twists and stunts are helping him, you know, generate pressure as well. But I'm just excited to see that hungry version of Gary again. I think the season got off weird because of the footing in Brazil, and then you're playing these mobile quarterbacks where you got to stay home and stay gap discipline with your rush. And I'm wondering if that just kind of got in their heads after a few weeks to start the season. But I think now that like everyone's getting on the same page defensively and they're letting these guys kind of go after the quarterback, I think the numbers are going to finally start catching back up with Gary. Cause he's simply too athletic and a little bit crazy, which you need as a pass rusher, to not be successful.
Yeah, I totally agree. Go ahead.
Great sign to see a, you know, really good Rashawn Gary game again. Cause 2 weeks ago, I mean, that was maybe most people's most disappointing player on the defense was just, he was really, really struggling, and, you know, you're paying him a lot of money and it's okay. You know, when are you going to show up again? And last 2 weeks have been good, you know, this one even better than last week, but just to see him kind of slowly a couple weeks now of just improvement and getting back closer to that Rashawn Gary that we saw previously is a good sign. And, you know, it'll be big if he can start to consistently look like that again. It'll make a big difference for this defense. And, you know, that pass rush has had plenty of bad moments this year and plenty of games where it just hasn't been there. But, you know, lately we've at least had a couple games of it looking a lot better and them really, you know, making their presence felt on defense and really putting a stamp on the game with the pass rush. So again, just a really good sign and just something that, you know, progressing in the positive direction for this defense.
And Jeff Hafley deserves a lot of credit for his blitz packages as well.
Yeah.
Speaking of credit for Jeff Hafley, these are the second half points allowed by this Packers defense so far this season. They allowed 17 second half points to the Eagles, which obviously is not great. Then 10 in week 2. Then in week 3, they allowed 7. Week 4, 3. Week 5, 6 points. Week 6, 3 points. Week 7, 3 points. So a touchdown or under in the second half in points allowed over the course of the last 5 weeks. So again, over the last 5 weeks, 7, 3, 6, 3, and 3 in second half points allowed. Like, just unbelievable what adjustments he's been able to make, how he's picking up on what the opposing offense is wanting to do. And then basically just having his guys go out and completely shut it down. It's been really, really impressive from Jeff Hafley. And he seems to be getting a greater feel for the NFL game as the weeks go on. It feels like he's getting a greater feel for his own guys and what they do really well. I think we're seeing the decisions of Evan Williams more at safety, Javon Bullard in the slot, Edgerrin Cooper at linebacker. Like, some of these things are just starting to pay dividends and it's really coming together. And I just think it's hopefully going to get better
from here on out. Let's talk some offense. We've talked mostly defense and special teams so far. Let's start with Jordan Love, 24 of 33, 220, three touchdowns, two picks, three sacks on the day. Overall thoughts on Jordan's performance? Nathan, you can start.
I mean, I think it really showed how he's never rattled. I think he had his mistakes. He, you know, obviously a couple picks, and was a little bit reckless with the ball a couple of times, had those moments that he's had where it's just, okay, you know, what were you doing there? But he stayed in the game. He stayed, you know, pretty poised. And I think he just kind of, just stayed the course. And he kind of talked about it in the post game where he was like, I'm going to play the way I play. You know, sure, I might have a couple of interceptions and some, you know, dumb decisions sometimes, but like, you also don't, if you play too conservative, you're not going to have the good plays. And he had several good plays in this game as well. And, you know, having the pick on the first drive, bouncing right back, having a dart to Tucker Kraft for the touchdown right after that. And then, you know, you have another pick later, but bounces back. And then to have the game winning drive, you know, again, just to kind of hang in there. All right, get the ball back. We're down two. And were they down one or two at the with the last drive? One?
One. Down.
Yeah.
Yeah, down one.
Doesn't really matter. But yeah, they were down one. And it's like, okay, you know, still got a chance to go win this game. Goes down, wins it. Didn't try to do a couple plays in the last drive where he, you know, kind of tried to do a little too much. But I was afraid he was going to make, you know, the big mistake and throw a pick on the last drive like we've seen a couple times where just kind of tries to force something and, you know, makes a big mistake. But he kind of just – all right, took what the defense gave him a little bit, got down the field, and, you know, puts them in position for a field goal. So I was impressed with that that aspect of it where it wasn't a perfect game. I thought it was overall like pretty good, but a couple big mistakes, but he just was able to hang in there and still do enough to win this game. And, you know, you can live with a couple bad plays as long as you're getting the good plays to kind of make up for it. And he's been making the good plays to make up for it. So you can't be too upset about a couple picks when you're also getting the touchdowns and you're also getting, you know, game winning drive to go along with the picks. So, you know, still stuff to clean up, but this is kind of just who he is. And that's okay. You know, he's got a mix of Rodgers and Favre in him. And I love, there was a tweet, I'm sure you guys have seen it, where it was like, he plays like there's someone that has like a giant lever controlling that just flips between Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. And they just flip that a few times a game because it'll look like Rodgers for a little bit. And all of a sudden he'll make a Favre like play. And then he'll, you know, in good or bad for Favre, like he'll make a bad interception or throw a bad interception, then he'll make a great daredevil type throw. So just kind of a little all over the place, but he usually ends up with a pretty good game. So
Tyler, what about you, bud?
Yeah, he's such an interesting quarterback, man. I mean, not only has he missed two games this season, he currently is tied for the league lead in passing touchdowns and interceptions. I don't even want to say it's Brett Favre. It feels like he flips between Rodgers and like Jameis Winston, where it's such a fascinating just season he's having so far. And like, the interceptions don't really bother me because at least he's taking shots. I mean, his average depth of target like every week feels like pretty ridiculous. He's willing to push the ball vertically and he throws some absolute seeds. I mean, the one to Tucker Kraft this week, I think of that like dig or whatever, that deep crosser to Christian Watson last week where he throws it like 50 yards without any loft. It's like on a rope. He has all the arm talent. I think it's just getting some bad habits out of him. And it's kind of weird because, again, he's shaking off the rest of still technically early in the season for him. He missed a couple of games. I'm not too worried about it. The receivers have kept changing. I think now that everyone's healthy, they're all getting on the same page and they can run the freaking ball. I feel pretty confident that by the end of the season, he'll go back to the second half Jordan Love of last season where he was playing like an MVP.
So I'm going through. All right, let's go through these together. Let's have fun. Let's have fun on the podcast here. So the first interception of the year for Jordan, we're at eight interceptions, right? First interception, it's the one he's throwing to Musgrave on the hot, and the safety comes down. Reed Blankenship comes down. There's talk of maybe Musgrave should have cut it over a little bit more. I can see what he's thinking. I don't think this is like this unbelievably terrible gunslinger decision. It was a great play by the safety, and maybe again Musgrave could have been a little bit better on it. Nothing super super worried. All right, so then the second throw is the one against Minnesota where he throws the ball to Christian Watson, the one where Watson got hurt on. And we've talked about that one. Like, the linebacker is supposed to go up the seam with Musgrave. And like LaFleur talked about it. He's like, the linebacker on that one carries Musgrave in that defense like every single time. But the linebacker made an unbelievable play, cut it off, undercut it,
and then made a ridiculous interception on that play because there's a ton of contact there. Like, we see wide receivers not be able to make catches through that type of contact, but the linebacker somehow makes the pick. It's an unbelievable play by the linebacker in that situation. No real massive situation or like concern there. The next interception is the one where Dobbs and Musgrave are aligned on the same wave, like the same, for like that, or not depth, but like the same line, right? Yeah. So he throws it and then Musgrave goes up for it and Musgrave tips it. Then Dobbs tips it. Then it's an interception by the Vikings defender. No real concern. That's not really on Jordan. We heard later that Dobbs should have had a different like route on that and not been in that spot. So it sounds like it was more on Dobbs. And there's just a bunch of like bad luck too, where it gets tipped three times or two times and then yeah. into the hands of the defender. Then you have the YOLO ball to Dontayvion Wicks. That one, nope, can't happen. That to me is like the first one. It's like, all right, there's a little bit of that gunslinger. That one can't happen. All right, then you get to the Rams game. Of course, the pick six, and he's rolling, and he gets hit, and he throws it away. He goes full Will Levis. He's clearly trying to get it out of bounds. He can't get it out of bounds. It goes right to the defender, and it gets picked sixth. Have to figure out a way not to make that decision and that throw. That to me is like number two in the gunslinger mentality sort of situation. Then we get the Arizona Cardinals game, and my thing is not wanting to load at the moment. Here we go. So I'm going through. This is the one where Dobbs just slips. Melton just slips.
Yeah.
So Melton just slips, goes right to the defender. Not anything on Jordan. Then I'm curious your thoughts on this one. The first interception today, Jalen Petrie, I think makes an unbelievable play. Love probably needs to have vision ahead of him a little bit more to see that Petrie was starting to creep a little bit. But like, you see Wicks make that move. Petrie's clearly supposed to be with Dobbs on the outside. Love is expecting it to be there. Like 99.9% of the time, the defender's going to go with Dobbs on that play. But again, this is one I probably tip my cap to Petrie and the defense a little bit more, making a great play. And Matt kind of said something similar. And then the third and final, or the last one, I should say, the second one in this game, this to me is one that he can't throw. He's fading to his left. There's a safety deep. He overthrows it. It's a bad decision and a bad throw. So we're at eight interceptions, and I get it's only been five games since he missed two. So it's not a great interception to touchdown ratio. Like you said, he leads the league, but I would say like three of these are probably in the category of, all right, gunslinger slash making really stupid like bad decisions or whatever. I'm just not fully on board with the like, oh my God, I cannot believe all of these idiotic decisions that Jordan is making, and he's completely going Favre or Cutler or Jameis Winston or any other name that we want to put here. I think that he is making some unbelievable big time throws, and there have been what I would say is arguably three decisions that I think he should probably have back at this point. And if that's what we're talking about, like three decisions that, yeah, you would probably like to have back, like sign me the hell up. Like that is going to happen. That's going to be something that you will love to see get cleaned up. And I'm sure he will. And over the second half of last season, he did a phenomenal job of making sure he was taking care of the football. So I don't have any real major concerns here yet. I trust Jordan. I trust Matt LaFleur. And I especially trust Tom Clements to make sure that some of these are getting toned down a little bit. But I think the narrative is already almost too far of like, yep, we're in full Favre mode. It's like, I'm not quite there yet.
My bigger issue isn't even in the interceptions. It's just the silly body does silly body things at times where it doesn't need
that's
to.
Fair.
Like it's like underneath routes, and it's like you got a clean pocket and you're just fading away and you're not getting the guy.
Yep. Stride. That I'm good with. That needs to get correct. I'm totally there with you on that.
Cause like it's so funny that like he doesn't get the credit of the arm strength that a lot of these guys have. Cause I keep thinking about that throw to Watson for that touchdown last week. Like he just has some unreal velocity on some of his throws because of just the torque he has when he turns his body. He's got long ass arms and he can just really rip that thing. It's the turnovers are going to happen. Some of them are lucky, you know, maybe it regresses to the mean, you know, shout out Paul Noonan and reporting is eligible for that one. But I think some of that just regresses because it's just some dumb turnover luck. And by the end of the year, maybe it all just balances out.
And I do think some of the fan reaction to this stuff has to do with, you know, having 15 years of watching the quarterback that did this the least and had the, you know, basically never made those type of, you know, decisions yeah. and mistakes. And so anytime you go from that quarterback to one that does that at all, it's going to feel like it's happening a lot and probably feel like it's happening a lot more than it actually is. you know, as you said, I do think it gets overblown. Is there some, you know, a little bit of that? Yes, there are plays where he's making some dumb decisions, but it's not anything. As I kind of said, as long as you're getting more good than bad overall, like, you can't complain too much about it. You're going to have some moments where, you know, he tries to force something, he tries to make a play and it's not there. But that's part of, you know, trying to make a big play and trying to, you know, you can't have the great plays without having the risk of it possibly going wrong. I know Tyler mentioned, you know, air yards. He's been consistently at the top in air yards this year and really just pushing the ball down the field, you know, sometimes maybe a little bit too much. Even I know that first game back, he was throwing a lot of deep balls that just seemed a little ill-advised, but he's, you know, toned back on it a little bit more the last couple weeks and just been more, you know, a little bit smarter, I think, about when to take those shots. So yeah, it's not something I'm like freaking out about it, you know, or panicking about, oh my God, he's literally Brett Favre and he's, you know, just completely reckless with the ball. It's just some moments. And again, some of it to the defense, you got to credit the defense sometimes too. You know, they can make plays too. Sometimes it's not always just the quarterback being, you know, stupid on every interception. So
also, if he does end up going full Brett Favre, as long as that includes three MVPs, two Super yes. Bowls and a Super Bowl win, like, I'm not going to be too upset by it no. at the end of the day. So that's fine by me. All right. Just really quick before we get off of offense, Romeo Doubs, 8 catches, 94 yards. I thought he was fantastic. It felt like every single one of those catches was contested, had to use the strong hands and plucking him outside of his body. I thought that was a big time performance. Came up clutch on the final drive with a big catch to set them up into field goal range. Just every single time it was nothing easy, other than, I guess, the first one of the day where he got awesome separation and it was just an easy pitch and catch along the sideline. But big time game for Romeo Doubs in that one. Looking at injuries, I believe, unless anyone wants to correct me, the only one that we know of is Quay Walker with the concussion. I don't think there were any other known injuries. Zach Tom went out for one play where it looked like it was an equipment issue. Jair went out for one play, got checked out and went right back in. Didn't seem like there was any issue with him for the remainder of the game. So again, knock on wood, hopefully no other injury concerns coming out of this one. And we'll see if Quay can get through the concussion protocol this week or if they'll have to play without him going into Jacksonville. But and then of course we'll get the injury reports on Wednesday when we get that first practice. Meanwhile, the NFC North, Detroit Lions are 5-1. The Minnesota Vikings are 5-1. Your Green Bay Packers are 5-2. And the Bears with a bye week are 4-2. We are looking at a 19-6 division. And two of those losses had to happen because they were within the NFC North, where you had an NFC North team versus an NFC North team. It is a crazy, stupid division. Vikings and Lions both looked really good in that game and are going to continue to be a problem. And then again, Bears had a bye week and Packers beat one of the best teams in the AFC. So this division, like I said, stupid good.
You know, the Bears far and away have the hardest remaining schedule in the NFL.
Yes.
Cause I bring that up often cause I lived in Chicago for 6 years and all of my Chicago buddies bug me constantly about how great the Bears are right now. And I'm like, give it a few more weeks. You guys just played the Panthers and the Jaguars. Let's yes. pump the brakes a little bit.
The Bears are clearly to me, the, you know, fourth out of the four teams here. It doesn't mean they suck. I'm not saying
they don't suck. Terrible. Sure.
Yeah. But when you're looking at these teams, like I think Packers, Lions, Vikings are three of the top six teams in the NFL. And I just think the Bears are much more middle of the pack. You know, again, looking at the teams they've played, you know, you lost to you barely beat the Titans, lost to the Texans, lost to the Colts, barely beat the Rams, beat the Panthers and beat the Jaguars. Not overly impressive. As you said, the schedule remaining is pretty crazy. I remember, just when I was looking
here.
At it,
I got it.
Yeah.
Here. So
yeah, I was going to talk about the last, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games or 7 games is pretty crazy. When you look at it, there's not like one semi easy game in that whole stretch.
So they go to Washington this week or this upcoming week, which is not going to be an easy game unless Jaden Daniels is potentially out. Hopefully he's not, because we would get Caleb Williams versus Jaden Daniels, which would be a lot of fun, but we'll see what that injury entails for Daniels. Then they go to Arizona. And then New England at home. That Arizona and New England game, those are their two easiest remaining games on their entire schedule. And again, one of them is on the road to Arizona. Then they have Green Bay at home, Minnesota at home, at Detroit, at San Francisco, at Minnesota, Detroit at home, Seattle at home, away against Green Bay. Like that is a brutal, brutal
they are gonna, schedule. Every Bears fan is going to be in for a rude awakening. And again, I'm not saying that team sucks, but it's just with a rookie quarterback having to go against that schedule, it's not going to be very pretty. And I looked at it at the beginning of the year and I thought the same thing. I was like, I remember sending a text to my friend. I was like, the Bears are going to start out with a pretty good record and then they are going to, you know, I don't want to say fall off a cliff. I'm not saying that they're going to like lose every single game of that stretch, but they're going to, I think, fall off pretty hard in the second half of the year when they have to go through this, you know, gauntlet of a final eight. It's eight games of just like all those games you mentioned of just none of those are even remotely easy. It's just every single one is a test. And to have to go through that whole thing with a rookie quarterback, I just think is going to be a very difficult challenge for them. So yeah, they're clearly to me the team that, you know, is the odd one out here that probably won't be a playoff team.
I will say this about the Bears. I think they are going to have a massive say in how this NFC gets seeded out the remainder of the year. Because no matter what, I think they're going to be a pain in the ass for everyone to play. That defense is really, really good in Chicago. And you clearly have some big-time playmakers on that offense. They play, again, Washington, who is at the top of the NFC East right now, Green Bay, Minnesota, and Detroit each twice. So, like, they're going to affect the NFC North in a very major way. And then they have San Francisco and Seattle, two teams that are definitely going to still, you would think, San Francisco, I know, is not off to a great start, but still two teams that you would think would be in that playoff sort of conversation. So they are going to have a massive impact. And the teams that are able to get through Chicago with a win or two, and the teams that cannot get those wins against Chicago, that is very much going to shake up, I think, the remainder of the NFC. So Chicago is going to have a huge say in that. Quick thoughts on Packers, Jacksonville before we get out of here.
Don't lose. Don't lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Do we say the word trap game? You're coming off a Houston Texans win, and Detroit is looming right after that, and then a bye after that. You got the Jacksonville Jaguars right there. It's a little trappish.
It is. Yeah. I'm not too worried about it. I do think that, I mean, the difference in these two teams right now is just very large. I know the Jags won today. They went against the worst team in the NFL. The Jags just are not a good football team right now. And it is one of those, just please take care of business. And it doesn't even have to be pretty. Just get a win, get out of there, and, you know, move on. This should not be a game that, just do not lose this game. Do not lose the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2024. Don't do it. So, yeah.
Yeah, how much fight do the Jaguars still have? I think that'll tell us a lot about the game, because early against the Patriots, it did not look like there was any. So we'll see.
Jacksonville coming off back-to-back weeks international, and now they come back home and play in this game. So we'll see if they are up for it or not. But like you said, Green Bay, just find a way to come out with a win, and don't take that game for granted, because I'm sure Jacksonville put up a little bit of a fight, but Green Bay should come away with the win in that one.
It should be a game that the pass rush should hopefully look good against, or good again against, because Jags have a pretty good or pretty bad O-line. And so this should be hopefully a game that the Packers can continue to, you know, put some pressure on and really get this pass rush going against Trevor Lawrence and, you know, really get to him. So on paper, there's nothing that tells me that this should be any type of trouble, but those are usually the games then that somehow give you the most trouble. So, yeah.
I'll go ahead, Tyler.
Packers are 5-point favorites as it stands right now.
That's not great.
That feels low.
It feels low, but I don't know.
Vegas knows something, and usually when it's lower than you think, okay, that is a bad sign, because
I'm still mad. Playing. They said 2.5 for the game today, and I took 2.5, and they won by 2. So
good teams win, great teams cover. We're not a great team right now.
Unfortunately, we got to get there. Yeah.
Obviously, this is the Pack-A-Day podcast, but a lot of Wisconsin sports fans listening. So, Nathan, I'd be remiss not to ask you, as a coverer of the Milwaukee Bucks, this is the last time we will talk prior to the start of the Milwaukee Bucks season, your predictions for the Bucks this year. How many times are they going to beat the Indiana Pacers, most importantly? Because we may have somebody on the show that...
I almost made a gesture with my hands, and I'm glad.
I am so, so excited. This just feels like it's going to be a bounce back year. I'm not going to guarantee a title or anything like that. No, screw it. I am going to guarantee a title. The Bucks are winning the 2025 finals. Dame's bouncing back. Giannis MVP season. I feel really good about where this team's at, just with being disrespected and kind of being under the radar. Everyone's kind of writing them off. And, you know, it might be rocky at times. They might go through some injury stuff with Chris Middleton or whatever. But I do think that this team healthy is as dangerous as any team in the league. And I just don't feel like they're being treated that way. And I just think they're going to kind of remind some people this year. I feel very good. I feel very good. And I just am looking forward to having Bucks basketball back. I cannot wait for Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. Tyler, how about your end? Oh, I'm sorry. We are desperately out of time. We're going to have to get going before we get to the Pacers talk. This is the Packers. We can't talk basketball on this show. Tyler, this This is the Packers.
Just take the K out. Just take the K out. We're right there. Packers, Pacers, right there.
Yeah, just take the KO. There you go. All right, final thoughts before we get out of here, guys. Tyler, I'll start with you and tell us where we can find your amazing work as well.
Yeah, you can find me at the 33rd team. Work today on a piece about Drake May and just how even in that loss, I think he really does have all the tools to be the franchise quarterback in New England. Trying to think of what else I got. I don't have anything else right now. Final thoughts are just, hey, the Packers are 5-2. 6-2 looks really nice, though. So if they want to win next week, just – when you say your team's 6-2, it just feels good, doesn't it? So 5-2 is fine, but let's go 6-2.
Nathan?
Yeah, you can find me at Nathan Marzion on Twitter. And as Andy mentioned at the start of the podcast, I do Behind the Bucks Pass, writing for Behind the Buck Pass on Fansided and starting a Bucks podcast and everything. So I'll be doing more Bucks content this year than even usual. But yeah, I mean, that's once Bucks season starts, that's the main team I'm covering, but I still obviously a huge Packer fan. So I still am tweeting a lot about the Packers, making some victory videos. I will not have one this week, but if they, assuming they can take care of business against the Jags, I'll have one covering the last 2 weeks. So yes.
Beautiful. Cannot wait for that. Make sure to go follow both of these amazing people again at Nathan Marzion and at Tyler D. Brook. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. And of course you can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Tyler, Nathan, and I, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.